Well, farmers and consumers in the tiny landlocked state of Vermont have initiated a petition drive to reject the federal government's Food Safety Modernization Act. Their effort leads us to ask, what could possibly be wrong with government-safe food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 712th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Port Villa who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Miss Idaho herself, Nikki James. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Folks, in its last hours, the lame duck 111th Congress passed the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010, which directs the Food and Drug Administration to, well, guarantee safe food. But given the history of such government efforts, like, for one example, the government's Deficit Reduction Commission, we wonder if the FDA will have the ability to guarantee safe food. But we do know that the Food Safety Modernization Act will guarantee one thing for sure, and that is that there will soon be an entirely new army of federal agents regulating who may grow our food and how they may grow, process, package, and sell it. This army of feds will, we are told, save us millions of dollars in medical bills because with government safe food, there, of course, will no longer be any food poisonings in America, which is a very good thing, right? But some, like the Vermont Coalition for Food Sovereignty, harbor doubts about whether government safe food is such a good thing. In fact, the coalition is now petitioning its state government to support Vermont's food sovereignty, which we think is just a clever way of saying no to Big Brother. The Vermont Coalition for Food Sovereignty's impertinence to the federal government leads us to ask, what could possibly be wrong with government safe food? And here today to help us find an answer, we have Jessica Bernier. Did I pronounce that right, Jessica?
Well, some people say it like that, or you can say Bernier. It's up to you.
How do you say it?
I usually say Bernier, but it's a French name, and we are here in north central Vermont, so Bernier is the way I hear it often.
Okay, I'll use it both ways through the program then. So, Vermont, you're the spokesperson and lead organizer for the Vermont Coalition for Food Sovereignty. What on earth is the Vermont Coalition for Food Sovereignty?
Okay, well, as you mentioned before, this whole thing kind of sprung out of the Food Safety and Modernization Act, which is something that a lot of people have been paying attention to and a lot of people haven't over the last few years in its various incarnations. And before it was going to pass, I really personally felt like we were at a crisis situation, like our way of life here in Vermont is going to be jeopardized by this bill.
And wait a minute, before we go any farther, how could government safe food possibly, well, we'll get into that, I'm sure, as we go along. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I sent out an email to some people and got some responses, and within a week we had planned what was the only nationwide protest of the Food Safety and Modernization Act. And we were realists, and, we kind of knew that there was going to be no, our delegation was going to support this. And so we decided that we wanted to make this protest something more positive and productive. And so we discussed ways at the protest of, how we could move forward to protect our right to food here and to protect our ability as Vermonters, Vermont consumers, Vermont farmers, Vermont food processors, to continue this lifestyle, this way of living that we have here.
Which of course is predicated on your ability to grow and process your own food, right?
Absolutely. I mean, and that's not just true here, that's true everywhere.
Right.
So we decided that we were going to come up with a resolution, and within 2 weeks of the protest, we had We had a general draft that we threw out to our working group within the coalition, which is about 30 people, and we batted it back and forth a little bit, and we decided we were happy with it, and so now we're running with it. And we've gotten a lot of attention, which is very, very encouraging.
And here we are giving you some attention. How would you define food sovereignty?
Well, food sovereignty, to me, is, you know, the ability for people to control what they eat.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. What happens when you take your petition out in the street of Vermont and you walk down the city streets and you say, "Excuse me, ma'am, would you please sign our petition for Vermont's food sovereignty?" What do people say when they hear that?
I get a lot of different reactions. The most popular reactions are, "Oh, give me that. I want to sign it. I've seen it. I've heard of it. I want to know. I want my name on it." And other people are like, "Well, what is it going to do?" what is it going to do? And that's a really good question, because I think it's up to each and every one of us to decide what it's going to do. You know, once you read it and you understand that this is basically a declaration of human rights, the right for individuals to be able to save, feed, grow, process, consume, and exchange food and farm products, because you need farm products to raise animals, you know, this is a fundamental right. Civilization rests on the ability to produce and exchange food.
Well, that would seem to be perfectly logical to me. You know, when I was in the fourth grade, I remember doing a written, what probably was my first written report, and the teacher signed me a state. You want to write a report on a state, and somehow I ended up with the state of Vermont, which seemed very remote, which is ironic enough for a child of the Big Sky state of Montana to think of remote as being Vermont. But Vermont seemed like a very remote and exotic place. And so I did a written report on it. And lo and behold, I ran across the Vermont state motto, which is freedom and unity. And I got to I still think about that because of the two terms that are just exactly the opposite, freedom and unity. You know, one can either be free as an individual to do as one pleases, or one can live within the unity of a community. So there's this wonderful opposition here between freedom and unity, and the government evidently deems it important enough. The community deems it important enough to grant the government, federal government, complete control of our food chain so that we can have government safe food. So to participate in this community and to be unified with the community, we somehow have to accept that. But how does that square away with the whole notion of the first part of your motto, which is freedom?
Okay. You gave me a lot to digest there, Michael.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
The motto of Vermont is freedom and unity.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting, you know. Freedom of the individual is of paramount importance. And yet, it's important only up to the point where it does not infringe upon the ability of a community to survive, right? So there you are. You're free to grow your own food and process your own food, unless it somehow interferes with the community. And what the community is saying is that now the federal government should be in charge of all of our food.
Right, but I don't think that's what is being said.
Okay.
I think that Vermonters, there's a slogan here. I'm a Vermonter, I do what I wanna. I'm a Vermonter, I do what I wanna. And that's basically, I mean, I've seen a lot of that spirit kind of squelched down a little bit, but it's still here. You know, we, I believe, as Vermonters, really are live and let live people for the most part. I mean, the quiet ones, the ones that don't speak out, are the ones that really appreciate the freedom, and they don't wanna, and they don't usually, they're live and let live people. And at times over the history of Vermont, we've had to come together despite our differences in our expression of freedom, so long as we don't hurt each other, to be unified over certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this Vermont Coalition is a prime example of this. This is the most, I'm pretty politically active here. I consider myself an engaged citizen. I try to encourage other people to be engaged citizens. You know, this coalition is probably the most diverse, politically diverse group of people that I've ever worked with on anything that I've ever done. And I think that it speaks to the fundamental truth that food is something that we rely and depend on. Without food, we have lost our lives.
And, there you go. Well,
yeah.
We're going to have to take a quick break, Jessica. But when we come back, I'd like to pick up the whole notion of can Vermont be sovereign in its food? And I'd like you, if possible, and I know you can, to give us a taste of Vermont's food. And tell us how it's possible for Vermont to be so independent in its food that you want to be sovereign. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. We are talking about food sovereignty and us and Vermont with Jessica Bernier. We will be right back. Do stay tuned.
You eat food, think food, and love food. Now is the time to meet the people of food. Hello, I am Poppy Davis, Executive Director of the Ecological Farming Association, with an invitation for you to meet eco-farmers from all over the country at the 31st Annual EcoFarm Conference, January 26th through the 29th at Asilomar in Pacific Grove. Meet representatives from every aspect of ecological farming and natural foods. See, hear, and taste it all. From heritage seeds to biofuel tractors to farm finance, commercial food processing, distribution and sales, and the policies and politics of food. Learn about food and farming opportunities that will make your head spin. Listen, see, taste, and feel. The entire ecological food and farming community is coming to Pacific Grove for EcoFarm, Wednesday, January 26th through Saturday, January 29th. All we need is you. Join us, eco-farm.org. eco-farm.org.
Welcome back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with Jessica Bernier, who is a spokesperson for the Vermont Coalition for Food Sovereignty. And for those of you who have not been to Vermont, like me, and I don't suppose all that many of us have, Vermont being way up there in the middle of nowhere in the Northeast there, but it is a beautiful place, and it is a wonderful place to contemplate. Jessica, what about your food up there? I mean, what is the country like? Can you produce your own food? What do you grow? Is it good? Is it delicious?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, very delicious. Well, interestingly enough, before I got on the phone with you, I was in the Winter Farmers Market in the capital of Montpelier. And so right now at the farmer's market, you could buy, your root crops, your carrots, your beets, different types of beets, potatoes, onions, leeks, shallots, cabbages, bread, baked goods, salsas, canned beans, beef, pork, rabbit, guinea hen, chicken, different types of prepared foods, maple syrup, eggs, herbal tinctures, all sorts of things. This is winter. It's 12 degrees outside right now.
but the food sounds good. And, you know, the food sounds like it's the kind of food that you would want to eat in that kind of weather.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think I'd want to live on lettuce in that kind of weather.
No. In fact, the closest thing that I saw to lettuce today was a Savoy cabbage, which I picked right up.
Uh-huh. Well, good for you.
I'll be stuff in that later.
We have Sharon calling in from Vermont. May we pick her up and have her ride with us as well?
Sure.
All right. Sharon, are you tuning in from Vermont as well?
Well, I am, Michael, and you know me. This is Sharon Zeccanelli.
Oh, good. Sharon,
yes,
how are you?
Yeah. Good, and Jessica's a really good friend of mine. And
hi, Sharon.
I was unable to access the show via my computer, so I thought I'd call in. And so I missed the first 10 minutes, Jessica. And so I'm here to help.
Well, let me fill you in really quickly. It's kind of an interesting one because when I was a fourth grader, I did a written report on Vermont, and I ran across the state motto of Vermont, which is freedom and unity,
mm-hmm.
which are like hot and cold.
Right.
How can you be free and be unified with the community, or vice versa? How can you be unified and be free? And those two kind of interest me when it comes to food sovereignty. the federal government and the governments of all of the states have got together and said that we must have the federal government take control of our food chain and charge the Food and Drug Administration with guaranteeing safe food. And thus, to be unified, we almost get behind this federal government effort to make our food safe. And yet, how does that square with being free? You know, and the ultimate in freedom is the freedom to be able to grow and process your own food.
Well, that's right. Now, I don't know if Jessica had time to tell you that in a suit by the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, the FDA in their answer said that people do not have a reasonable right to eat what they choose, and that people do not have a right to feed their children in the way they choose. So the FDA believes it can tell us what we can and cannot eat.
That doesn't sound like it's being very free to me. That's
no, it's not free at all. It's not free at all. So I'm here to help. Jessica, I don't know if you know that New Mexico has a Food Freedom Act based in part on the work that you did here in Vermont. And
So you guys are spreading sedition around the land then?
Well, we are. I was really helpful in writing the first draft of this, but then, you know, Jessica just has so much energy.
Well, let's go to Jessica for a minute. Jessica, what could possibly be wrong with this whole notion of government safe food?
Well, first of all, what is the criteria for safe food? Who defines what safe is? Safe does not necessarily mean healthy. And when the government defines what is safe, what say do you have into whether something is safe? The government may say raw milk is not safe. I may say I love raw milk and I think raw milk is the best thing that ever happened to me. That's up to me. It's my body.
May I say something?
Yeah, just a sec. Hold on. Go ahead. Finish up.
I'm good.
Okay, go ahead, Sharon.
Well, when Mrs. Obama stands up in front of people at Walmart and says that they are going to stop childhood obesity, you listen to her words very carefully. Does she ever, ever, ever mention that they will take genetically modified food out of the food chain?
No, but I just saw today where Walmart's getting behind safe food.
They're not going to eliminate GMOs, though, Michael.
So GMOs are considered safe, so they're going to get behind safe food. See, this is the difference. They're reframing our discussion of food from health into safety.
Right.
Well, the only safe food is dead food, right? Well, isn't that true? The only food that's safe is food that has no life in it?
No, I don't agree with that.
That's what they want to say. You know, they're shutting down small cheesemakers because they swab and they find one Listeria M. But you could swab every surface. You could swab your own skin, and you'd have Listeria M on you. And that means that what? You're a walking biological soup?
Look,
don't give them any ideas, Sharon.
Let me ask you this. The next question in this series then would be, for whom will government make food safe? Jessica?
Well, you want my gut reaction is no one. Really? I mean, I understand that
it's obviously going to make food safe for somebody, but who?
Well, safe for the producer.
Yeah, which producer?
Certainly not the small producers.
Well, which producer does that leave then?
It leaves industrialized, vertically integrated agriculture.
Sure. Somebody that has the economies of scale sufficient to buy the government, right?
Well, let me put this in front of you, okay? You have a farmer here in Vermont, and this farmer is diversified, is growing a number of different, you know, field crops and root crops, maybe raising chickens, eggs, whatever. Now they have to have, for every single thing that they produce, they have to have records so that they have risk management plans for each specific thing that they're raising.
Each now, chicken, right?
The chicken does not have anything to do with the Food Safety and Modernization Act because this is really not dealing with the meat. But as far as crops, okay, say you have a farmer who's growing, you know, he's got wheat, he's got hay, and then he also has a field of root vegetables. He's got some squashes and pumpkins, and he's got apple trees, et cetera, okay? He needs to have, or she needs to have, a risk management plan for every one of those different crops that that farmer is growing. Now, who does this make this food safer to have a risk management plan for all of these things? And or does it make there more work for this farmer outside of the work of actually producing the food? A large farm that's growing just soybeans or just corn has one risk management plan, as opposed to a diversified farmer that could have upwards of 60.
Well, I ask again then, for whom does government, is government making food safe for?
The answer is no one.
No, they are making it safe for somebody. They're making it safe for those who are big enough. For those who are very big and have one kind of crop.
Right.
Okay, and then they're going to guarantee their food is safe, okay? And thus, that's who's going, they're making food safe for. Those people who are growing your food in Vermont, that local food, they're not going, government is not going to make food safe for them. But maybe they are. We'll pick it up when we come back. And we'll go to the phones. The phone numbers today, if you'd like to participate in this food sovereignty issue, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. The question today, what could possibly be wrong with government safe food? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Do stay tuned with Jessica and Sharon. Well, in its last hours, the Lame Duck Congress of the 111th Lame Duck Congress passed its Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010, which directs the Food and Drug Administration to, well, guarantee safe food. Given the history of such government efforts, like, for one example, the government's Deficit Reduction Commission, we wonder if the FDA will have the ability to guarantee safe food. But we do know that the Food Safety Modernization Act will guarantee one thing. There will soon be an entirely new army of federal agents regulating who may grow our food and how they may grow, process, package, and sell it. This army of feds will, they say, save us money because there won't be any more medical bills from food poisoning in the United States. Right? Good thing. But we wonder what will happen then to local food like that of Vermont, where people have been living on local foods for a long time. And from what Jessica Bernay says about the winter farmers market in Montpelier today, it sounds like there's a lot of good food still available from local producers. Oops, they just lost Jessica. Maybe you can pick her up. We still have Sharon here. Sharon, do you go to the farmers market today?
No. Michael?
Yes, we're here. You're on.
It's Jessica. I'm not sure. Maybe you lost Sharon?
Oh, I guess I lost Sharon. Maybe Sharon will call back here. And so you were at the farmer's market. Wonderful food. Sounds like it's delicious. Now, when you have what this Food Safety Modernization Act will mean, to my way of thinking, is that there's going to be a whole new army of feds running around the neighborhood.
Maybe not necessarily. The there were no funding provisions in that bill, and so there is an enforcement clause which basically says that the Secretary of Health and Human Services can contract or and coordinate with the governors of the individual states and to align their various agencies to participate in some of these enforcement measures. So really, actually, that ends up being an unfunded mandate on the states, depending on whether or not they can get funding for this in the next session, which is kind of doubtful because, you know, they have to, if they're going to vote to raise the debt ceiling, they've got to cut spending. And when you take entitlements and defense off the table, it doesn't leave a whole lot left where cuts can be made. And agriculture is definitely an area where we're going to see cuts. And I can tell you that I heard that right from representatives of our congressional delegation in our Vermont Senate Agriculture Committee two Thursdays ago.
So they're going to take a lot of money away from agriculture. And yet, so as I understand what you're saying then, the Food Safety Modernization Act essentially tells the states that they have to do this, but doesn't give them any money to do it?
That's That's it. Yeah, that's it right there. And the other thing is that the this is still out there. The rules haven't been written yet.
Well, once you establish the bureaucracy, doesn't the bureaucracy write its own rules?
Sure.
And then you
have a situation where, you know, this is something that's pretty relevant to what's going on in Vermont. It was recognized by our legislature that we really had a shortage of slaughterers. And so Act 207 was passed here, which was supposed to allow itinerant custom slaughterers to slaughter animals raised via contract on the farm. Well, the USDA has pushed back and said that they interpret our law differently, and so they want to or our law doesn't interpret their rule the way that it was intended, so they want us to change our legislation. In the meantime, we still have a shortage of on-farm slaughterers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that was brought up in a recent document that was put together. It was commissioned by the legislature. It's called the Farm Slate. And it's a 10-year... Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, this is an excellent point that you bring up because it really illustrates the conflict that's going on with respect to food safety and who may grow and who may not grow food. We're talking about slaughtering farm animals for food. Now, the food safety rules and regulations established by the Food and Drug Administration, USDA and whatnot, have by and large eliminated all but a very few giant processors from processing meat these days. And what you see across the land is that farmers are no longer able to process their own animals, so all of those animals therefore must be sold to the giant consolidated operations that have these giant feedlots and slaughter facilities. Mm. And those are the only ones who are now able to process meat simply because they have established the food safety rules so stringent that only those who have the economies of scale to comply with these incredible rules can comply.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore nobody else can be a producer. Now, some inroads are being made with respect to on-farm slaughtering. Here in California, we actually have one that has been approved, although they don't want to talk on the radio about it because of fear of probably exactly what's happening in Vermont. The FDA, you know, hears about it and then comes down on them, and that's the end of that. So here you have the federal government structuring the rules in a way that allows only giant consolidated manufacturers to be in the business. And thus you're pushing back by trying to allow on-farm slaughtering, and the federal government is coming in and saying, wait a minute, you can't do that. And that's
Right. I mean, it's a little bit more nuanced than that, but that's kind of it in a nutshell right
mm-hmm.
there. It's like, you know, our legislature and various advocacy groups and individual farmers really, you know, took a thoughtful approach to putting together this legislation to allow for some flexibility when it comes to on-farm slaughter. And this is exactly the kind of thing that we need. Vermont has always been an agricultural state, but it hasn't always been a dairy state. Our farmers over the, you know, centuries have had to adapt to changing market conditions and have had to change, you know, have just had to adapt to, you know, changing conditions in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've always been had this degree of flexibility within our system, within our food system here to naturally adapt to what consumers want. And when the federal government comes in and says, you know, this bill that you thought so carefully about and really is very helpful and necessary to increasing local food supply and security and access for consumers, you know, when they start pushing back against us because of their interpretation of a rule, you know, law trumps rule. And it's time we feel in the coalition that, you know, the people recognize and the legislature hears the people say, we are more than capable of coming up with good, solid food policy for the state of Vermont here. And as far as this food policy relates to food that is staying within our borders, we have the right to decide what happens. And if the federal government does something that we feel is an infringement, it's our right to have that conversation here.
And who do you think is whispering into the federal government's ear about what kind of rules to establish? Are you whispering in their ear?
Oh, I try.
it sounds to me like you're reacting to what they do.
Well, you know, in a way, yes, this is reactive. But on the other side of it, you know, how long as people are we going to fight against things?
Okay, gotta take a quick break. Right back, Michael Olson, Food Chain Radio, Jessica Brunet. Food sovereignty. Should we have the right to our food, or should we rely on government? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Pick up your phone and join us. Well, the federal government wants us all to eat government-safe food. But the people of Vermont want to eat Vermont-safe food. Should the people of Vermont have the freedom to eat their own food? Or should they eat government-safe food? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. You want to finish your point that you were talking about before we left off there, Jessica Brunet?
Oh. Well, my mind has really wandered, and I was just thinking about what you were just saying, you know. And I don't really think it's an either or question here. I don't necessarily think that Vermont's idea of safe isn't necessarily the federal government's idea of safe. And who knows, you know? I mean, our standards could be higher than anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that
that one is safe and the other is not. It doesn't.
Right. I mean, you know, I think, you know, the further away you get, the further the food on your plate is away from the farm, I think that just isn't, you know, naturally it's going to be less safe.
That would be Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food.
Exactly. So, you know, I don't necessarily see it in conflict, other than that some of the regulations, the rulemaking, the paperwork, the record keeping, you know, that these big producers have variances mm-hmm. by which they can get out of, you know, international, you know, I was listening to a commercial that was just on, and they were talking about, you know, cherries from Chile for $2.99 and
mm-hmm.
asparagus from Chile for $1.99. And I'm thinking to myself, like, yeah, those are really good prices. But I mean, is that actually what that food costs? In terms of why can these people from other countries sell these cherries for $2.99, traveling all of this distance, and that food still be $2.99? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And that kind of addresses one of my deeply held concerns with respect to the Food Safety Modernization Act and the efforts of that the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, will put forward here with respect to establishing this incredible bureaucracy to oversee food safety. There are going to be thousands of agents sooner or later, maybe in 10 years or so, there's going to be thousands of federal government and state agents who will be making rules and regulations about who can do what, where, why, and when. So you up there in Vermont with your two cows in the neighbor's pasture are going to be looked upon by a whole cadre of government people who are going mm-hmm. to be making rules and regulations about what you can and cannot do.
Great.
Let's go to Mary in Santa Cruz. Mary, welcome to the food chain.
Hi, Michael, and good morning to your guest. You know, you just have to follow the money. President Obama has assigned Taylor as Food Czar, and he's a Monsanto mucky muck.
Michael Taylor you're talking
yes.
about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And his interests and the big money supporting governments are corporations, and Monsanto is one of the biggest. And their interest is to make sure that you small farmers, you bumpkins up there in Vermont, don't cut into their profit margin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they think of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't protect us. They haven't so far. They don't go down to the docks and do the dirty work of inspecting food that's poisoned from China. It isn't our food in the U.S. that makes us sick.
Well, some of it does.
Not very much of it. It's the dirty peanut butter plants and the huge egg producers that get fined for layers of rat defecation, and they don't get shut down by our government. They get their hands slapped, but they don't get shut down. Follow the money.
I thank you, Mary. Appreciate it. All right. Well, follow the money, Jessica.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting when you start talking about money because we're heading for inflation. I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm looking at the money that I spend on just groceries or everyday things. You know, and it's nothing is getting any cheaper. But this if I want to go to my co-op or walk back inside to the farmer's market, I can buy a loaf of bread that is made from grain that is grown in Vermont for $5 a loaf. It is the best bread I've ever eaten. Or I could go to the local chain grocery store and I could buy some regional bakery bread, you know, that is comes in a plastic bag and will stay soft for 2 weeks, you know, for $3.99. You know, the local foods are actually becoming much more competitively priced.
And you just addressed Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't.
Right. And so, I mean, it automatically makes that beautiful, organic, Vermont-grown loaf of bread so much more competitive with the, you know, Arnold bread. You know, I mean, people are increasingly, as we see commodity prices going up...
Well, isn't that the threat? Though that if you're
right,
let's go to Dick. Dick, welcome to the food chain.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that if this thing ever does get enforced and is funded, it will be the death of the local farmers' markets.
Well, yeah,
because the average farmer isn't going to be able to set up these kind of safety contingency plans.
Well,
and it's going to create a cottage industry for people who do put those plans together and then sell them.
I suspect that the Tester's Amendment to the Food Safety Modernization Act will protect farmers for a while, but it's not the actual Food Safety Modernization Act that will threaten farmers. I suspect it will be the army of bureaucrats who will be coming in that will threaten farmers and will make it almost impossible for any but the biggest and the most well-funded and those that have the economies of scale to buy influence in government, they will be the only ones who can probably survive this. So we're going to take a quick break. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. Today we're talking about saying no to Big Brother from those folks up there in Vermont. Jessica Bernay is with us, who's a spokesperson for the Vermont Coalition for Food Sovereignty. And you, of course, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, the phone number today. Question, what could possibly be wrong with government-safe food? Why are those people up there in Vermont asking their state to maintain their food sovereignty? Why shouldn't they be satisfied with that government-safe food? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080.
You eat food, think food, and love food. Now is the time to meet the people of food. Hello, I am Poppy Davis, Executive Director of the Ecological Farming Association, with an invitation for you to meet eco-farmers from all over the country at the 31st Annual EcoFarm Conference, January 26th through the 29th at Asilomark in Pacific Grove. Meet representatives from every aspect of ecological farming and natural foods. See, hear, and taste it all. From heritage seeds to biofuel tractors to farm finance, commercial food processing, distribution and sales, and the policies and politics of food. Learn about food and farming opportunities that will make your head spin. Listen, see, taste, and feel. The entire ecological food and farming community is coming to Pacific Grove for EcoFarm, Wednesday, January 26th through Saturday, January 29th. All we need is you. Join us, eco-farm.org. eco-farm.org.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'm fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Mike Jacoby inviting you to join me Saturdays 3 to 5 p.m. right here on KSCO. If you love great jazz, terrific interviews, clever repartee, and frozen margaritas, you're going to love Raising the Standards. Saturdays 3 to 5 p.m. right here on KSCO. Now let's go over this again. Great jazz, terrific interviews, clever repartee, and frozen margaritas.
Jacoby's back, and we've got him.
Oh, would someone mind bringing the margaritas?
Saturdays at 3.
I like them blended. You know, with a little salt around the rim.
You like chips and salsa?
I love them.
Shrimp?
Oh, little umbrellas.
Guacamole?
Oh.
Well, what do you think out there? Can we or will we be free to eat local food in a nation that demands we eat government-safe food? What do you think? Do you think there can be both? Do you think that we can live in a world where there's government-safe food and still somehow manage to hold on to our ability to grow and process our own food? Well, that's the question we have on the table today with Jessica Brene, who is the spokesperson for the Vermont Coalition for Food Sovereignty. Let's go quickly to Nick. Nick, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning. Question for you. Is this the same government that says they're going to give us safe food when they already allow? I'll give a short list. MSG, aspartame, high fructose corn syrup, bromide. They spray the produce with fluoride, which is a poison. They irradiate our meat. Growth hormones in the meat, put mercury and aluminum in our vaccines. I guess they're going to give us safe food now, aren't they?
Well, those things are all safe food, though.
Oh, yeah, of course, according to them. I think what the bottom line is for our friends in Vermont, we're all going to have to get back to the 10th Amendment of the Bill of Rights.
All right, guys, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Well, what about all of those things that the government deems safe? Do you put those in Vermont safe food?
I don't, and I don't think I'm sure that if I walked into that farmer's market and I even suggested that, I would be shooed out of there.
Well, but that's what the government deems safe. That
right.
is safe food,
mm-hmm.
and yet, you in Vermont and people elsewhere, of course, don't think it. Of it being a safe, but that's what the government thinks, and the government. So will we be able? What do you think, Jessica? Will we be able to eat your food in Vermont? Now, if I were going to Vermont, I wouldn't want to eat your food. You know, the food that you described in the farmer's market today. That's the food I would want to eat. I wouldn't want to eat government safe food. I just don't want to eat dead food.
Right.
And will we be able to have both? Will those people who want to eat government-safe food have that? And will you folks in Vermont still be able to eat your food?
Well, I'm going to say I hope so. I mean, I think that we're always going to have access to McDonald's and Cheetos. You know what? And for however much local food I do consume, I also do make an occasional stop at McDonald's and stuff my face with Cheetos. It's just something that happens, you know,
sure.
And I have...
Me
and
too,
I
me
have,
too, yeah.
Hey, you know what? I have the right to do that, and so does everybody else. You know, we have a right... We deserve a choice. And we deserve to have that choice. And the only way to make sure we have that choice
is freedom.
Protect
the local food. And choice is freedom.
Yeah.
No choice, no freedom.
No. Can I direct your listeners?
Please, quickly.
We're probably running out of time. To VermontFoodSovereignty.net. You can also link up with our Facebook page there. But we've got a lot of good information.
Thank you, Jessica.
And,
VermontFoodSafety.org. Thank you, Jessica. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.